just 1,921 points back of Yager. This is the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMF.
Get out the highlight reel again, Harry. There's only four people in the whole rink he didn't deke, and three of them are ushers.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
If you leave me, God rest my soul. But if you stay here, I'm no better off. Bury me 6 feet down below. But I'll be smiling when I go. Damned if I do, damned if I don't. She looked at me and I sold my soul. She's the devil. She's the devil in a trap. I'm in peril. She ripped my heart out of my chest. I would give my life for one kiss from the devil. She's the devil in a trap. And I love.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, strictly talking hockey. Glad to have everybody with us here tonight. Going to be a big show as we go over lots of details, because the devil's in the details, not in the dress anyway.
Nice.
There we go, a little segue getting through the song. That's Teddy Swims you're hearing, his brand new single, Devil in a Dress, from was released on October 28th, actually, from the new album coming out, that came out on November 4th, Sleep is Exhausting. Sometimes it is.
Sometimes, yeah.
He's currently on tour down the East Coast in the U.S. He's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania tomorrow. He'll end up in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, or Macon, Georgia, I guess it is, on November 20th or whatever. He's heading down the East Coast there. Jayden Dinsdale is his name. Teddy Swims apparently is in reference to his size. He's a pretty big dude. But he's from Atlanta originally, so there's a little Teddy Swims for everybody. Teddy Swims!
Yeah.
Good tune to kick it off with. All right, Teddy, we're going to get out of here because we got to get through the details, because we promised we'd go through this piece by piece. And legitimately, you probably have heard, you probably have been very aware. Actually, before we get into that, Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. I've been waiting to talk about this all week.
That's why I wanted to get in this quick, because I know you're just chomping a bit here. You probably have heard, you probably witnessed, you probably caught at least a little bit of the news that the Boston Bruins put themselves in a world of hurt this past weekend. Not so much in that they were injured or in bleeding or anything like that, but that public relations took a massive blow. Mm-hmm. critical shot to the solar plexus.
For a team that is one of the best in the NHL right now, this is not the kind of story that you want to be specifically throwing out there when you're heading into Toronto for Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah, of all places.
The biggest hockey market with the most media on national television.
All I can say is this was a brutal, brutal... I mean, from Friday to Sunday, the Bruins were it was the story, the only story people were talking about. I mean, yep. Gary Bettman was here in Winnipeg for the Filipino Heritage Night, and they were asking him about other questions about that. Yeah. I mean, they asked him a few, obviously, about what's going on here. But
by the way, Filipino Heritage Night was great.
Fantastic logo, fantastic setup. Yeah. I wish the Jets would do more of those. Again, whether it be the indigenous logo that they wear, whether for the Wasak game, whether it be the Filipino Heritage Night, I wish they would do more of these.
So fun fact, because I had to look this up for work, the Filipino population is the highest concentration of the immigrant population in the prairies. So Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, our highest proportion of immigrants come from the Philippines. Or
look
from
the
Philippines.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Come from a nice tropical environment to a brutally cold environment like it is today. Anyway.
But lovely people.
Let's get back to the story, because the story's going to take us a while to get through. We got half an hour and we're going to have to go through like 45 minutes of this. So, you probably heard the Bruins signed controversial defensive prospect, anyway, Mitchell Miller, to an entry-level contract on Friday. That contract, 3 years, $2.85 million. Mm-hmm. So, a very rich contract for a kid that
never touched NHL ice.
And likely shouldn't have got that much.
Never will.
Again, you probably heard all about it via social media, but let's cut through the opinions and commentary. We're going to get right to the facts here. In 2016, Miller was convicted in juvenile court of bullying a black classmate with developmental disabilities when he was 14 years old. The Arizona Coyotes drafted Miller in the fourth round of the 2020 NHL entry draft, but renounced his draft rights right after an Arizona Republic investigation shed more light on the specifics of how Miller and a classmate bullied and mistreated another classmate, one Isaiah Meyer Crothers. Mm-hmm. Now, in his defense, Isaiah has been working his butt off to try and get out of the media.
Yes.
He does not want this.
Yeah.
But it's every time Miller gets back into the news, he gets thrust back into the spotlight.
And let's not say, like, this is an indication we should stop talking about it.
No.
It's an indication that Mitchell Miller needs to do some work, so this isn't the story.
So you might be wondering how a guy who is convicted in juvenile court of bullying a black classmate, how he got an NHL contract. Bruins general manager Don Sweeney went on a Zoom call with reporters on Friday afternoon and made all sorts of claims that legitimately will probably raise red flags in your mind,
yes,
which will make you ask the question, what the hell were you thinking?
Also, where have you been the last 2 years?
So let's start with this because, again, Sweeney on the Zoom call on Friday afternoon said that he struggled himself in determining whether signing Mitchell was a decision the organization should make. If you're struggling on whether or not you should sign this kid, chances are that's a red flag that you shouldn't be signing him.
Yeah.
But again, maybe there's details I'm not aware of, but whatever. Sweeney told reporters that he reportedly spent 10 days with Miller and his family in what I'm going to call the Don Sweeney reality TV family program. Because again, what NHL GM goes and spends 10 days with a guy just to check out whether or not he's been reformed? If you don't know the work that he's done, if you can't find out via Google search or phone calls or anything like that, spending 10 days is the worst way to do that, because
you're going to get his side of the story and only his side of the story.
Not only that, but you're going to get the family to act a certain way as well.
Yes, act, because his family, as we have seen now with the tweets from his dad, they feel a very specific way about this.
Again, we'll get into that in a second. So again, after spending the 10 days, Sweeney said, quote, I came to a position that if the organization was willing to support the person and give an opportunity, recognizing that I come from lifelong educators, my father, in particular, who gives a crap, Sweeney, where you come from? This isn't about you.
Yeah.
I get that that looking to give somebody a second chance is important, but that person has to provide the receipts that they've actually earned that second chance. You're not asking, again, trust isn't given, trust is earned.
Yes.
And that's what we're telling everybody.
Forgiveness
here
is also earned.
Correct. So Sweeney, who said that Mitchell paid a punishment, is going to continue to carry that for the rest of his life.
That's a lie.
Well, again, bit of a stretch on that, but we're going to talk about that in a second. He said he's going to hold them to a standard that needs to understand to each and every one of us as individuals, look in the mirror every day, respect each other, and have to be unilaterally inclusive. Okay, whatever. That's all garbage. It's just a PR statement. Again, if you're struggling to sign this kid, you don't believe any of what you just said, because you're already telling everybody this might not be a good idea.
Also, the way that it's been phrased by specifically Sweeney, he only knows about the one incident that landed Mitchell Miller in court,
right, but
everything that happened before.
Again, we'll get to that in a second. Sweeney repeatedly stressed that he couldn't say if signing Miller was the right move for the Bruins. Hello, if you're not sure...
Red flag, just waving it over my head.
But then doubled down on his next statement saying, quote, I've also come to the understanding that I don't think forgiveness is part of this, because if that had happened to one of my own children, I can't categorically say that I would have. What?
So if you wouldn't have forgiven the guy, why are you saying that everyone should forgive him so he can have his career back? Why are you giving him this opportunity and saying, oh yeah, well, if it was my kid, oh, no forgiveness, but it's not my kid, so I don't care.
What?
Like, are you kidding me? There is no way that you can justify this at this time. Anyway, he goes on to say, again, he goes on to add, but I also would applaud somebody that if you were willing to welcome somebody back for a second chance, you've got to walk that walk. No, you don't.
You don't.
You don't welcome somebody back for a second chance. They have to earn that.
Yes, they need to deserve the second chance.
Anyway, so when Sweeney brought the idea to the Bruins leadership group, again, we're talking about guys like Pasternak, like Bergeron, like Marchand, they too questioned this move. Sweeney said, quote, same reaction a lot of us had, like, why? Why would you necessarily invite this? If the players on the ice are telling you this is a bad idea, and you're going, they don't really know.
I
don't trust my team.
Famous for standing up for what is right all the time and, like, speaking honestly with their management. you're getting a very that is a very honest thing coming from players that are really rarely honest like that.
Again, Sweeney tried to rationalize the decision that he made in signing Miller based on Miller's hockey ability after the defenseman recorded 83 points, 39 goals, and 44 assists in 60 games to the Tri-City Storm of the USHL last season. Again, nobody is denying that he can play hockey.
Yeah.
That has never been a question. Nobody is saying that he can't play hockey. After all, he was drafted by the Coyotes in the fourth round.
Said the same stuff about Tony D'Angelo.
Again, this is what I'm talking about. Nobody's going to question his hockey ability. This has never been about hockey ability. It's been about his character.
Yes.
But again, the craziness that Sweeney went on with said his production offensively, the power play, his ability to generate, get up the ice, shoot the puck, and be part of the offense gives him an opportunity and a chance as a professional. Yeah, in any other situation it would. We're going to work on him with the defending part of the game. Who gives a damn? You've already missed the big picture.
Yes. We're not talking about him as a player right now. We're talking about him as a person. Him as a person does not belong in the NHL.
So, again, I've struggled with the decision to sign him. Again, I wouldn't forgive him if he did this to my kid, and the Bruins players don't want him there. If those aren't the red flags that you're staring at...
Three strikes, you're out, bud.
If those aren't the red flags you're staring at, who gives a damn how many goals and assists he puts up?
Like, it's ridiculous. You should have seen this train coming down. Once again, where were you 2 years ago?
Again, we're going to get to that. Bruins would be assigning him to the AHL Providence Bruins, where Sweeney talked about earning his opportunity in the NHL. Quote, I think more importantly, he has to earn the respect of his teammates and really everywhere in society to garner a second chance. If you're going to talk about him having to earn the respect to get the second chance, guess what? He hasn't got that point
yet. You do not.
Oh my God!
Give the person the reward before you make them work for the reward. I never was given the whenever my parents promised me, oh yeah, we'll take you to Tim Hortons, get you a hot chocolate if you do this. You'll get this from us. They never gave me the hot chocolate up front and said, okay, now clean your room.
Right.
They said, clean your room. When I clean your room, then we go get it.
If you can provide the receipt, you get the second chance. You get the opportunity. You get the prize. But. Whatever. So moments after...
You didn't give him the stick. You just gave him the carrot and said, walk on.
Moments after the signing went public, Miller issued a rather generic public relations statement saying, quote, when I was in the eighth grade, I made an extremely poor decision and acted very immaturely. Okay, we're not going to read the rest of this because it's all just crap.
He also references his age three times in that. Never says what he did. Never explains that it was racist and ableist bullying. And never acknowledges what happened before that.
No, he did say, I bullied one of my classmates. It's the only time he used the word bullied or bullying.
The rest of the time, it was a mistake, a poor decision. I was a child.
My actions can have a negative impact. Wrong and unacceptable. And all the, you know what?
All the passive
talk. You sit on a throne of lies.
The passive talk, talking around the issue, nodding. Like, this is what we talk about when we talk about, like, a value, like a genuine statement, a genuine apology, or a genuine acknowledgement.
Show some remorse, man.
But it's like... You dance. This is not a genuine apology. This is not a genuine acknowledgement of harm, because he's walking around and he's providing excuses all the way through and snaking around the issue and never fully acknowledging, this is what I did. What I did was wrong. I acknowledge that what I did was wrong and I caused harm.
So
he never takes any accountability.
No, I'm not denying that. But deep breath on this, because then the Bruins players who landed in Toronto, again, they were going to Toronto for a game.
The biggest hockey media
on Hockey Night in Canada. Bruins players began speaking out on Saturday as they entered the arena, as they got to the rink. One of those players was Nick Foligno. Again, not the captain. He's, again, respected veteran in the locker room, one of your glue guys. He said, quote, it's tough. It's a hard topic. The organization is not going to do something that would jeopardize it, referring to team culture. But in saying that, it's not something that anyone in this room stands for. It was a tough thing to hear for our group. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think any guy was too happy because of how proud we are to say this is a group that cares a lot about ourselves and how we carry ourselves and how we treat people. So Nick Foligno legitimately saying culture over player.
Yeah. Love him or hate him, you have to respect the Boston Bruins for the culture that they have built as a
right.
team. Right. That is a hard... core, like a hard-nosed, hard-working, honest, respectful team there at Boston.
And you know what? You can say, I hate them because of Marchand. I can hate them. But again, the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, the stuff that goes on in the locker room and in the community, that's where they're making the impact. And that's the important stuff.
Yeah.
Who cares about whether or not Marchand, face washes a guy to death? Yeah. I mean, not to death, but whatever. So again, reporters pushed on. Captain Patrice Bergeron was asked to his thoughts on it. He made similar comments as Foligno, reporting or stating to reporters, quote, "I was asked by Don close to a week ago for my opinion. I had my concerns. I shared my opinion. In a way, I was not necessarily agreeing with it. To be honest with you, the culture that we built here goes against the type of behavior. We're a team that's built something about character, excuse me, character, people, and individuals. What he did obviously is unacceptable. We don't stand by that. For me, I know for myself anyways, in this locker room, we're all about inclusion, diversity, respect. Those are key words and core values that we have. We expect guys to wear this jersey to be high character people with integrity and respect. That's how they should be acting.
Mm-hmm.
From my standpoint, it's a hockey operations decision. For myself, we can control what we can control. Truthfully, hopefully there's some growth and change. If it's the same 14-year-old that would be walking into this locker room, he wouldn't be accepted and wanted and welcomed in this locker room, to be honest with you. That's my stand on it.
Hey, Patrice. I'm gonna jump in here.
Dude right there is Hall of Famer at that point.
Oh, yeah. He's already Hall of Famer.
I mean,
better. Patrice, I'm going to hop in there and say... he is the same kid because he has not shown a single ounce of growth. He has not even given a genuine face-to-face apology to his victim.
Again, all of this being said, I mean, Patrice Bergeron is just playing the fence at this point, trying to be as politically, I would say, unwavering as possible.
Yeah, trying not to throw his general manager under the bus, but also... make his opinion known.
Right. That I'll state it as subtly as possible.
One of the most well-respected captains in the NHL, and then another former captain in Nick Foligno, both saying, yeah, we're not cool with this.
ESPN's Emily Kaplan got an interesting text from an NHL executive stating, quote, "One of the biggest unforced errors I've seen in my two decades working in the sport."
And you want to know the sad part with that? Adam Wilde from the Steve Dangle podcast got a report that there were three other teams that were interested in Mitchell Miller when the Bruins signed him.
So again, you're saying to yourself, okay, so nobody wants him there, but he's signed.
Yeah.
What about the NHL? What does the NHL think? Like, the NHL's got to have an opinion on this as well. Again, not that he's known for being the good guy, but NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, who's usually the villain in every story, weighed in. And again, I'm surprised he legitimately is coming out. Again, if Bettman is on the right side of history on this...
You know you're very much in the wrong.
And again, I'm not saying that Bettman's normally wrong. I'm just saying that Bettman looks out for the best of the league, not for the best of the players or anything like that.
Yeah.
When Bettman comes out and says what he said, and I'll read it in a second, holy crap. Quote, "He's not coming into the NHL. He's not eligible at this point to come into the NHL. I can't tell you that he'll ever be eligible to come into the NHL. If, in fact, at some point they think they want him to play in the NHL, and I'm not sure they're anywhere close to that point, we're going to have to clear him, excuse me, and his eligibility, and it'll be based on all the information that we get firsthand at that time." He also added at the end of the statement, quote, "Nobody should think that at this point that he is or may ever be NHL eligible, and the Bruins understand that now."
And by saying that, he walked the NHL into a very contentious position that nobody was expecting.
I don't think the NHL is in a contentious position. I think the NHL is standing on the right side of
I know they are. They're standing on the right side, but they're putting themselves business-wise in a weird spot.
Because again, the Bruins are part of the membership, right? So I think this is legitimately Bettman playing the father and saying, "You guys done bad. We're going to fix this right now."
Yeah, but usually they're not going to give the PA a bone to like go at them about something.
I get that. But at the same time, though, again, this is something where if you would have come to us before you did this, we could have had this discussion quietly.
I'm not saying Gary's wrong about what he said.
Oh, no. But I'm just saying that if you didn't clear it through the NHL and you knew this was going on,
yeah,
chances are you done bad again. Messed up, Sweeney.
Because Gary was very unhappy when he said that they were not consulted on this.
No.
They basically told the league when they signed him.
NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly told ESPN's Greg Wyshynski, doubling down on Bettman's statement, quote, "Bettman wouldn't rule on the NHL wouldn't rule on the eligibility without a hearing." So they have to have a hearing in order to get Miller. So Miller isn't any closer to playing. Now that's all fine and dandy.
And he has to stand in front of the NHL and talk about it.
That's all fine and dandy, but the NHL basically gave them an out in that if he's never going to play in the NHL, who cares? So Sean Shapiro decided to go one step further and talk to the AHL. because that's where he's apparently supposed to go, the Providence Bruins. Mm-hmm. And the AHL responded with, quote, per our bylaws, any player under suspension to another league who seeks to play in the AHL would have the matter reviewed by the president to determine his eligibility. In other words, if he's not going to play in the NHL, there's a good chance he ain't playing in the AHL either.
Because the AHL does what the NHL wants the AHL to do.
If you want our money, you'll do what we say.
Exactly.
Now, you might be asking how the NHL allowed him to sign a deal if he's not eligible to play. Now, this is the big one, and this is where, again, sports lawyers and everybody's going to get, agents are going to get all up in arms. But he's on a deal. He should be able to play. Here's how it works. Bill Daly basically gave the details on this one, stating, quote, if his contract is compliant with the CBA and the player is eligible to sign, there is no basis to reject the contract. Bettman went through and clarified that statement from Daly, adding, quote, there's a difference between signing a contract and being eligible to play. What Bill is saying is eligible to sign a contract, that doesn't mean eligible to play. One does not necessarily lead to the other, and that's why I think there's some confusion on this. In other words, if you can hold a pen and basically scribble your name, congratulations, you can sign a contract, but doesn't mean you're going to play in the NHL.
Yeah, I could sign a contract, but they sure as heck aren't going to put me on the ice.
And that, folks, is how the Bruins are stuck with a player under contract who is now ineligible to play for them at any level, and in terms of absolute madness, I'm still shocked that Don Sweeney has a job today.
Me too. It's the old boys club, right? Like, we were talking about this yesterday. The fans and the players have basically drawn a line in the sand, and they're like, we're moving forward. We're looking towards progress and diversity and, like, positive ethics, and it's the management and the old boys club that is making the same mistakes and chasing dollar signs and diamond rings, which rings very similar to Hockey Canada in a scary way.
Now, a lot of people were on social media, a lot of people were on podcasts making wild accusations and claims. Not wild accusations, I guess, but just not knowing the full story a lot.
Yes.
So if you're unfamiliar with the story, Mitchell Miller grew up in Sylvania, Ohio. It's just a suburb of Toledo, Ohio. Miller admitted in an Ohio juvenile court to bullying Isaiah Meyer Crothers, as we know, we already established that, who was a black child in his class who shows developmental disabilities, which makes him basically about, in terms of his developmental disabilities, he's about 4 or 5 years behind everybody else in his class.
Yeah.
So whatever that's causing him, whether it's, you know, whether it's some sort of mental capacity or some sort of physical ability, whatever it is, the developmental disability that he's going through basically sets him back about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, he doesn't have the reasoning and cognitive ability of the people, of his peers.
Right.
Somebody like Mitchell Miller, who knows this and can use, if you've ever talked to a person who's younger than you, they don't know a heck of a lot.
Correct.
And you can manipulate them pretty easily.
So, while 14, Miller and another student basically tricked Meyer Crothers into licking a candy push pop that Miller and another boy had wiped in a bathroom urinal.
Yep.
Meyer Crothers had to be tested for hepatitis, HIV, and STDs. Thankfully, all the tests came back negative, according to the police report. But this is the act that landed them in court and forced both the Arizona Coyotes and the University of North Dakota to walk away from making Miller a part of their teams. Mm-hmm. Police reports at the time state that Miller and the other teenager were charged with assault and violating the Ohio Safe Schools Act in February of 2016, when they were accused of making Meyer Crothers eat candy that had been placed in a urinal, as per police reports. Other accounts in the reports indicate the boys urinated on the candy before giving it to Meyer Crothers. So whether or not, whatever they did in terms of this one act is what they were convicted on. Now, again, this is a horrific act. Nobody's taking that away.
But there's also a history of ableist and racist bullying precedes this moment.
And this is the crap that he is going to be held accountable for now. And this is the stuff that Boston should have been able to dig up if everybody else could.
And the thing that got him expelled from school.
Here we go. Miller and the other team, now this is in the police report, but Miller and the other team punched and pushed Meyer Crothers, according to the police report obtained by the Arizona Republic. The report also says that Miller lied to school officials about his involvement. At the time, Meyer Crothers had a mental ability of about a 10-year-old, according to his mom, Joni Meyer Crothers. She told the Republic that one of the key reasons Miller and the other boy admitted to the crime and avoided a trial was because it was caught on surveillance camera and it would have been shown in court. She said, quote, it was absolutely brutal. Had he not pled guilty, the video would have been released. It would have been so much worse on Mitchell because of the brutality to our son. He's smashing Isaiah's head against a brick wall, unquote.
I'm sorry, why are we giving this guy the benefit of the doubt? Yeah, he was 14 at the time. That is horrible.
What the story and the police report don't tell you, though, is that this is nearly a decade of bullying that Miller inflicted on Meyer Crothers. Meyer Crothers, who now lives in Detroit, told the Arizona Republic that Miller had taunted him for years, calling him, quote, brownie and the N-word, unquote, while repeatedly hitting him while growing up in the Toledo suburb. Other students at the junior high confirmed to police that Miller repeatedly used the N-word in referring to Meyer Crothers. Repeatedly. Uh-huh. In front of other students, which means he's unabashedly unapologetic for using this word.
Yeah.
That this is part of his regular lexicon.
Exactly. Like, the fact that he is saying it openly in front of so many people shows that he has no concept that this is a horrible thing to do, or he just doesn't care.
He pretended to be my friend and made me do things I didn't want to do, Meyer Crothers said in the phone interview with The Republic. In junior high, I got beat up by him. Everyone thinks he's so cool that he gets to go to the NHL, but I don't see how somebody can be cool when you pick on someone and bully someone your entire life. Unquote. That is a horrific statement from the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, nobody ever looked out for Isaiah is what that comes down to.
Yeah. And still, there are people who are defending Mitchell Miller.
All over the place.
Projecting, because yeah. I'm assuming that a lot of those people did just as bad or maybe not even in that realm, but they bullied people and they think they're going to get held accountable now.
Physically bullying, again, emotionally bullying them, using the N-word, I mean, obviously is just vile in terms of him basically being racist towards a black student. But again, all of this stuff started coming out as soon as the Arizona Republic started mm-hmm. digging deeper.
2 years.
So they went to the Coyotes, and when asked why the Coyotes drafted a player who had been convicted of bullying, Coyotes president and CEO Xavier Gutierrez released a statement that read, quote, when we first learned of Mitchell's story, it would have been easy for us to dismiss him, and many teams did. Instead, we felt it was our responsibility to be part of the solution in a real way, not just saying and doing the right things ourselves, but ensuring that others are too. Excuse me? So if you're basing it just on Mitchell's story, which is, I don't know where you're getting this from, because the Arizona Republic is cashing in all sorts of receipts right now. What are you doing, Gutierrez? What kind of mess are the Coyotes?
Dropping the carrot in front of him and saying, go. You don't have to put in the work. You don't have to earn this reward. Just take it and go.
Coyotes general manager Bill Armstrong was not involved with drafting Miller. We need to point this out because it's going to be a key point in this entire story. But Coyotes general manager Bill Armstrong was not involved in drafting Miller as per the arrangement with the St. Louis Blues. Basically, he left the Blues after the Blues had already gotten their draft stuff ready in order to take the GM job with the Coyotes before the NHL draft.
Because he would have known what was on the St. Louis Blues draft list.
Correct.
He also would have known who wasn't on the St. Louis Blues draft list.
But he could not be involved in the Coyotes draft, so no big deal. But Armstrong said in a statement to the Republic that Arizona scouts were aware of the bullying incident. So they knew this was already on his record.
All 31 NHL teams knew about the bullying incident because Mitchell Miller wrote the letter acknowledging that it happened.
That happened after the Arizona Republic story came out, though. That this kid might have been in trouble a little bit. Just a little bit. Miller and the other boy admitted to the misdemeanors, as we know, and were sentenced to 25 hours of community service and were ordered to write an apology through the court system to Meyer Crothers while participating in counseling and pay court costs.
Okay.
Fairly easy sentence if you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Again, write the apology, go to the counseling, pay the court costs, do the community service.
So it's about 5 hours for 5 days.
Joni Myers Crothers said the other boy broke down in tears while personally apologizing to her son. Yet Miller has never personally apologized, other than the court-mandated letter. The Coyotes sent the Republic a copy of the letter that Miller claimed to have given to the victim and his family. The family said they never received that letter.
He's never apologized.
He basically only did what the court told him to do.
This is the thing.
He never showed the remorse. That's the thing. You cannot apologize and just go, hey, man, I'm sorry. And be done with
it. It has nothing to do with hockey, but I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, man.
This is the thing I keep coming back to. There were two people involved in this incident. Two of them. The other guy did the work. He apologized, showed genuine remorse. He did the community service. He served his time. He actually built from what I've seen, he actually built a bit of a friendly relationship with Isaiah after the fact. And now he gets to go off. He's 20 years old now, probably in university or college, probably working. He gets to go off and live his life. and put this in the past because he did the work to put it in the past. Mitchell Miller has not.
Okay, so here's where Don Sweeney should lose his job if he hasn't lost it already, because 4 days after all this came out in the Arizona Republic, the Coyotes renounced their draft rights to Mitchell Miller on October 29th, 2020, after, quote, it learned more about the entire matter, unquote. So wait, if the Bruins came out on Sunday and said that they had learned new information.
What new information? Oh, the stuff that, because they kept referring to that singular incident. Oh, you didn't realize there was more? Where have you been the last 2 years? Don Sweeney, you were the GM of the Boston Bruins in 2020 when he was on your do not draft list. You should know this.
Coyotes president and CEO Xavier Gutierrez stated in a second statement, quote, what we learned does not align with the core values and vision for our organization. Leads it to our decision to renounce our draft rights. Oops. If it doesn't align with your core values and visions for our organization, what do you think the Bruins are doing? How does it align with theirs?
Oh, well, yeah, it aligns with theirs because they have an empty prospect cupboard and they need to start refilling it pretty quick.
Hold on, but what does that say about the value of winning versus the value of doing right, though? Because obviously exactly. Boston doesn't give a crap about the moral side of this, nor did the Coyotes at the time. It wasn't until they were embarrassed by the Arizona Republic that they renounced their draft rights.
Exactly.
And it wasn't until everybody on social media basically came out and just absolutely, you know, eviscerated the Bruins that they went back and said, yeah, we kind of made a mistake. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Like, what does that say about winning versus doing the right thing? This is ridiculous that NHL teams and hockey teams in general can get away with this crap. No other business in the world would be able to do this.
No, because it doesn't matter. Because Mitchell Miller's not some fourth line guy, some like eighth or ninth defenseman. He's a first round potential draft pick who could potentially develop into being a top pair defenseman on an NHL team. They don't care about his personality or his character. They care about winning hockey games.
So Armstrong, as we said, who was not in the draft, called it a unique situation, which is a nice way of saying you done messed up bad, Coyotes. He said, quote, we need to do the right thing as an organization and not just a hockey team. And with that, Miller was no longer an NHL-bound player as the Coyotes rescinded their draft pick or renounced their draft pick.
So they burned the fourth
Armstrong,
pick.
Who took over 2 days after the draft had finished, basically said, not on my watch.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying Bill Armstrong is the guy that we should be, you know, building castles for, building, you know, statues for, erecting statues for. But my God, he at least said, you done wrong.
Yeah. And like, the Coyotes thought that they got away with this, like, big brain, oh, we were punished and lost our first round and second round pick. We traded away our third round pick. We're going to get a first round talent in the fourth round. This is going to be great. Everyone's letting this guy slip by. We're going to take this guy here.
But what does it say? What does it say about a guy like, again, I'm not trying to compare the two. Bill Armstrong says, no, not on my watch. Mm-hmm. What does it say about a guy like Mark Bergevin then for drafting Logan Mailloux?
Exactly.
Like, what is wrong with people?
Gary must be furious because the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens have both royally screwed up in the PR department. And those are two teams on the NHL executive.
Well, one day after the Coyotes walked away from Miller, University of North Dakota did the same, releasing a statement on October 30th, 2020, that reads, quote, I've been closely monitoring the situation with concerning the men's hockey student-athlete Mitchell Miller, who was involved in the situation as a youth in 2016. We expect our students to live by our values in classroom, in the community, and when representing the university on the field of play. After much consideration and discussion with Mitchell, the Miller family, our athletic director, Bill Chavez, and Coach Barry, I've decided the best course of action for Mitchell and the university is that he is no longer a member of the UND men's hockey program. Mitchell may remain a student at UND, and we will continue to support his future intellectual and interpersonal growth. So, Andrew Armacost, the president of the University of North Dakota, not only, okay, granted, he took away his ability to play hockey at the school, but did not kick him out of the school. He still could have gone to school and got a college degree.
Exactly. He could have gone, gotten his degree, gotten a nice paying job, and be living his life. But no, he's going to chase down playing hockey because he wants to make millions of dollars.
Hold on. So you got...
And he thinks he deserves it.
You're complaining about not getting a second chance to get into the NHL. I get that. I get that that's a big loss for you.
Because he thinks he's owed it.
Right. But I get that's a big loss for you. But you were given a second chance by the UN, by UND to improve the character of your person. That's the important part.
You could have spent 2 years at UND putting in the work.
Don't tell me they don't have clubs that look out for racism, look out for bigotry, bullying, all that kind of stuff. Don't tell me they don't have that, because I know they do.
Exactly. You were given a second chance, but you think you're entitled. You're an entitled little child who thinks that just because you're good at hockey means that you're owed a spot in the NHL, and nobody can take that away from you.
So Mitchell's chances of playing in the NHL fall from maybe to highly unlikely, because he has no NHL team who drafted him, and his NCAA team basically told him kick rocks. But he did go back to the USHL's Tri-City Storm, as we know. He put up some decent numbers, which attracted the attention of Don Sweeney. Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the Bruins walking away from Miller on Sunday, 2 days after announcing they had signed him, as they apparently figured out how to use a search engine or email or a telephone or a combination of all three, because somebody did the homework finally.
Yeah. Like, the ridiculous thing is, I'm all for second chances. But they need to be earned.
Earned, yes.
You have had 6 years, Mitchell Miller, to right this wrong, to make it up to Isaiah, to genuinely apologize, make some change.
We're not done, though. You know that.
You haven't.
Because whatever the case, the avalanche of bad publicity continued, because it was capped off by Miller's agent, Eustace King, who defended Miller as a changed man through every media outlet he could find, despite Miller showing no proof of him doing or changing anything. And from very vocal statements from the Meyer Crothers family, including a statement from Isaiah himself that was sent to Akeem Alou of the Hockey Diversity Alliance that included lines such as, quote, "I have been bullied since I was in the first grade. Mitchell used to ask me to sit with him on the bus, and then he and his friends would punch me in the head. When I went to junior high, Mitchell would spit in my face and call me an N-word, and he threw food in my face."
Remember,
this is a kid now that's going through the same trauma mm-hmm. that he had to go through in 2020 when people started talking to him.
And at that time, he was 4 to 5 years behind everybody else
right.
developmentally.
So basically
He was operating with the mental capabilities of a 10-year-old when there are teenagers manipulating him, making him think that they're going to be his friend, and then abusing him, calling him racial slurs, using very possessive racist language, and making him clean up after them, they have bullied him and beat him up.
Just so that he could hang out with them.
Yes.
Because he wanted acceptance.
Exactly.
That is the most manipulative thing I've ever heard in my life.
Why do we want this guy in a position of influence where he's making lots of money? Because we don't.
So Miller reportedly contacted Meyer Crothers via Snapchat to apologize. This was admitted in that same statement to Akeem Alou, and that he was doing stuff within the community to basically improve himself. I'm going to give Isaiah a ton of credit here, though, because he asked for proof, which Miller could not produce.
Yep. Eustace King also lied about lied about the work that he did. Because it prompted the Carnegie Institute to come, because they had said he had committed to working with them, and they came out and said, we had a discussion with him, but nothing was ever agreed
upon. Well, no, hold on. So they walked that back a little bit, because they said that the head of the Carnegie Institute basically spoke to Miller about what needs to change and what he needs to do and where he needs mm-hmm. to go to do that. The biggest problem, though, is that one of the places that he was assigned to work at is owned by the same agency that Eustace King works for.
Yep.
So he's only doing it to self-serve himself. He's not doing it to make himself better. He's simply doing it just to say, put it on my resume.
I did it.
Yeah.
When he didn't finish the court-mandated volunteer hours.
Put it on my resume. I did it for you. Oh, and by the way, you're my agent. So we're good. So, hold on, we're not done yet, though, because, again, the fallout's still going to continue. The Bruins did sign Miller to a contract, as you remember, which mm-hmm. means that it's registered through the NHL, which means that it's now part of the NHL lore, and that means that it's valid in the eyes of the CBA, which mm-hmm. gives the PA a shot at it. So, if you want to walk away from Miller, you now have a problem on your hands that's going to require a pile of money to get out of it. This is ridiculous that this kid's going to get paid. Yep. But, according to ESPN's Greg Wyshynski, he outlined three options for the Bruins and Miller to legally part ways, despite never skating for the franchise prior to his release. Option one, he can be bought out at the end of the season, which would result in a salary cap charge of $287,222 annually through 2027. Mm-hmm. $287,222.
For a team that's about to go through it in terms of losing lots of talented players and having to pay people and potentially retool or rebuild, That's going to hurt.
Well, $250,000 doesn't really hurt them. But at the same time, though, Miller's getting $287,000 not to play hockey.
Yeah.
It should also be noted, though, that the Bruins still owe Miller his contract money for the 22-23 season, this season, which has been assigned to the, again, he's been assigned to the AHL, so he's not going to get NHL money, but he will get his $95,000 signing bonus and an $82,500 minor league salary. He's going to walk away with $170,000 if they buy him out. $180,000 almost if they buy him out.
Yeah. He gets his money.
That's insanity.
He gets his money.
So option one might be the worst public relations option for the Bruins. However, option two would allow for a settlement that allows Miller to become a free agent, worked on in conjunction with the NHLPA and Miller's agent, Eustace King. Wyshynski notes that a prospective settlement falls under the NHLPA jurisdiction, despite Miller being assigned to the AHL and having no NHL experience. Again, he signed an NHL contract, mm-hmm. so the PA gets to rule on it. This is probably the best scenario for both sides.
Yeah.
Go away. We don't want to talk to you again. Here's a quiet bit of money. Take off.
Yeah.
Might be the best option.
Because regardless, he's going to get paid.
Because option three just gets ugly. And that would be a traditional contract termination filed by filed due to Miller's past behavior. So this would be similar to the legal situation between the Sharks and Evander Kane over his behavior surrounding travel and COVID restrictions.
Yep.
Again, that was ugly. There was lots of hearings. There's lots of money going back and forth. Mm-hmm. They finally got out of it where they just basically bought out Evander Kane for whatever amount. But basically, Miller could grieve the entire $2.85 million if he wanted on that in that route.
Yeah. Which is going to be a lot of... Like, here's the thing.
And the PA can also grieve if they opt to suspend Miller for the length of his contract without pay.
Yes.
So this is an ugly one no matter which way you look at it.
He's getting his money regardless.
So he's going to get paid
you
for...
being on a throne of lies.
He's going to get paid regardless of what happens
here. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. You know, Isaiah gets nothing. I mean...
And he gets another world of memories of a time he hated
people
in his life.
People calling him. He gets Mitchell Miller blowing up his phone, trying to get Isaiah to forgive him for what he did, saying it, continuing to lie to Isaiah.
I hear you.
By saying that he put the work in, providing no proof of it, saying it had nothing to do with hockey. When the apology comes, when he's talking to the Bruins
again. I hate to say it, Eustace King, but...
Forget it, Donnie. You're out of your element.
On the personal side, it appears that Cam Neely is in full damage control for the Bruins. And I'm going to give Cam Neely as much props as I'm not a Cam Neely fan by any means, but yeah. I'll give him full props here because he issued a statement on Sunday that in part reads, quote, "We owe it to our fans, players, staff, partners, and community to make sure that our practices and protocols are in keeping with the ethos that we demand from ourselves and as an organization. Mm-hmm. As such, we'll be reevaluating our internal processes for vetting individuals who wish to earn the privilege of playing in the National Hockey League for the Boston Bruins. We are sorry this decision has overshadowed the incredible work the members of our organization do to support diversity and inclusion efforts. We will continue to stand against bullying and racism in all of its forms. To Isaiah and his family, my deepest apologies if the signing made you and other victims feel unseen and unheard. We apologize for the deep hurt and the impact we caused. Finally, as a father, I think there's a lesson to be learned here for other young people. Be mindful of careless behaviors and going with the group mentality of hurting others. These repercussions can be felt for a lifetime." He's not wrong. He did the two things that the Bruins should have done initially, which was, mm-hmm. "Hey, we screwed up and we're sorry."
Yeah,
that's exactly what needs to be said. On top of that, The Athletic's Fluto Shinzawa reported that Neely reached out to the Meyer Crothers family on Tuesday as well. As per his reporting, quote, Joni Meyer Crothers spoke with Cam Neely for 45 minutes. Neely offered to help with counseling for Isaiah. Meyer Crothers was pleased with the call.
He talked the talk and walked the walk.
He did what he legitimately stood up and said,
yeah,
I'm going to be accountable for this.
This is the perfect example of what Mitchell Miller should have done.
Ah, there we go.
He should have apologized to Isaiah's face, a genuine... So here's the thing. An apology means nothing if it is not accepted.
Well, no. I mean, an apology that means nothing that's not accepted means that either you haven't worked hard enough for the forgiveness.
Yes.
Or you simply are apologizing and it feels insincere.
Exactly.
So it's not without its meaning because it should tell you something as to how it's received.
Yes. But he does not get off the hook by texting or Snapchatting Isaiah a very weak apology.
Right.
or the statement that he put out before, the letter that he sent to the NHL teams, none of those are a good enough apology. Until Isaiah sits there and looks Mitchell Miller in the eye and says, I believe you, we are getting nowhere.
I don't even want him to sit and say, I believe you. I just want him to sit and listen to how this has impacted Isaiah Meyer Crothers.
Yes.
Because this kid legitimately did everything within his power to try and make friends, and Miller took that all away from him.
Yes. And he has tried to move on with his life, but it keeps getting brought up because Mitchell has done nothing but make it about Mitchell.
Right. And that's...
because he thinks he's entitled to playing in the NHL, to getting out away from this scot-free, and it is just... he was raised with all of the wrong values.
Well, and it still is, according to his parents' social media. So,
yes.
I mean, this is a bigger problem. This is a bigger issue in that this is the environment that he's coming from as well. Mm-hmm. And the issue that I see with that now is that he's radioactive. You cannot go near this kid anymore for any reason.
You can never...
I don't care if he's changed now. I don't care if he comes bringing a bundle of receipts saying, I volunteered and I did this and I did that. This kid is radioactive based upon the fact that his parents have influenced him so poorly, I guess so greatly, but in a poor fashion, that I don't think the leopard will ever change its spots now.
Yeah. Even if it appears so, he has burned the last... he has had 6 years. He's had 2 years since these reports first came out.
Since being drafted, to make
a difference, to make some change, to actually move forward. And he was well within his ability to, after getting dropped by the Arizona Coyotes, to go make change, come back, and earn a second chance. But he didn't do that. He did everything in his power to avoid accountability, to avoid changing, in the hopes that we would all forget and we would move on and he'd get to join an NHL team and make millions of dollars and move on with his life and, you know, chase the dream that he's always wanted. I am all for people getting second chances, but you have to earn that second chance. And at this point, he has done so much to show us that he doesn't deserve a second chance that I don't think one will ever come.
Speaking of second chances, not that we're going to end the Miller story on that, because, I mean, again, but I'm just tired of talking about Miller. He doesn't deserve this much. We spent 40 minutes on that.
Yep.
And that's 40 more minutes than I wanted to spend on Mitchell Miller for any reason. But now that you know the facts, you know what's going on with that contract and why the Bruins done messed up. Karen Pauls from CBC decided that she was going to do a little research on Hockey Canada. Not so much on Hockey Canada, but more or less on the money that Hockey Canada has by going out to survey a dozen national sporting organizations to see if they had similar funds stored away for potential sexual assault cases. Richard Powers, a lawyer and associate professor at the University of Toronto's Rotman School of Management, said that he didn't see anything wrong with the having the fund, that it's a good governance, good business decision, but that he had issues with the transparency, which is basically what everybody said.
That's fair.
Regaining the trust is going to be the hardest thing for him, is basically what he told Karen Pauls. Regaining the trust of Canadians will be the hardest thing for Hockey Canada to do. Eric McIntosh, professor of sport management at the University of Ottawa, told Karen, quote, wouldn't it be nice to have a fund to protect against these unforeseen events? Ideally, yes. In practice, I think it's very difficult. Many national sport organizations in our country are underfunded. They're understaffed. It's a haves and haves not in our Canadian sports system, unquote.
Yeah, Hockey Canada is more the exception than the rule when it comes to NSOs here in Canada.
And then Concordia University economics professor Moshe Lander, he said he finds it hard to believe that funds like Hockey Canada's NEF don't exist in other organizations. But he also said it's possible for organizations to confuse and distract the Auditor General from discovering such funds. So basically, it creates a bit of a problem here because, again, victims start coming forward saying, I was paid, I'm going to break my NDA because this is for the greater good. Go ahead and sue me. I dare you. Let's hear it in the public light. So what it does now is it basically forces these NSOs, these national sport organizations, to really reconsider how much money they're going to spend on stuff like this. So he's questioning whether or not they actually exist or they don't exist in terms of other sports maybe having them.
And Hockey Canada lied through their teeth to cover it up for
no
so
problem.
Long.
So Karen decided, you know what? Let's go find out. We'll talk to 12 various individual sport organizations. Athletics Canada, for example, track and field, cross country, all that. Athletics Canada does not and has not, as part of its budget, a contingency fund for non-insurable liabilities, said Caroline Sharp, a national team's communications specialist. So, Athletics Canada does not have that money. Again, from a pile of people that just run track, I wouldn't expect them to probably have a large fund like that.
Nope.
Baseball Canada, however, media contact Adam Morissette did not reply to questions about whether Baseball Canada settled cases out of court, if it has a contingency fund as part of its budget to cover non-insurable liabilities, and if so, if that fund has been used to cover allegations of sexual nature, where the funds came from, or if it has insurance to cover allegations of sexual harassment or abuse. So Baseball Canada, a little secretive in terms of their setup. Not saying that they have, I'm not trying to throw them under the bus, but if you're not answering the question, why not?
Exactly.
Boxing Canada says it has not settled a case out of court in the last 15 years, according to Rory Halpin, the executive director. We have no case or allegation on file before then, which leads us to believe that no case occurred before any of the present staff were in place or historically. So if we didn't pay anything out, we probably didn't have any.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Canada Basketball does not have a contingency for non-insurable liabilities, says Matt Walker, Director of Communications and Content. Canada Basketball has not been involved in any uninsured liability cases.
Okay,
pretty good. Football Canada does not have a dedicated fund for non-insurable liabilities, according to Executive Director Shannon Donovan. To my knowledge, there has never been a payout regarding allegations of a sexual nature. Due to the nature of our sport, football may be considered inherently risky. As a result, we do continue to do our due diligence to ensure we have sufficient affordable insurance cover for our members. Basically saying if there's an injury, we're covered for it.
Yeah, she's not talking about risk in terms of sexual assault. She's talking risk in terms of people getting injured.
Gymnastics Canada, which, again, I'm shocked by this, but especially after all the allegations that Rick West had found out.
Yep.
Gymnastics Canada said it has never settled an abuse or maltreatment case out of court, has, quote, never had or contemplated creating a self-insurance fund, and does not specifically budget for non-insurable liabilities, CEO Ian Moss said.
Because they don't have the money for it.
He said that to his knowledge, there has never been a payout regarding allegations of a sexual nature, unquote.
Might change soon.
I don't know about that, but okay, we'll go with that for now. Rowing Canada, quote, has never had a civil lawsuit filed against it in relation to any safe sport matter, therefore it has never settled a case out of court, wrote CEO Terry Dillon in an email. Pretty easy to see that one. If you've never had any lawsuit filed against it, probably didn't settle anything either. Rugby Canada says it budgets annually for insurance premium and claims, which are primarily focused on injury, but also includes maltreatment. According to Tanya Richards, Director of Marketing Communications, our insurance policies that cover us against harassment and abuse claims, as those are insurable liabilities. So, yeah. So, Rugby Canada doing their job as well in terms of making sure that happens.
It's Swimming, insured and people know that it exists.
Right. Swimming Canada, CEO Ahmed El Awadi. And again, swimming, you think that there might be a little bit of a risk there based upon swimsuits and all that kind of stuff. But, they do not have a fund that it can use against self-insure against some liabilities, nor does it have any plans to create one. Those types of funds don't exist, he said in an interview. He noted that registration fees paid by swimmers across Canada are used to, quote, invest in our future, our next generation athletes. We used the funds to invest in our sport programs, unquote.
Which basically means we don't have the money to throw at something like that.
He did say that some complaints to Swimming Canada that they have received are historical, going back 15 to 25 years. But he did note that those involved finally feel safe to report the alleged abuse, which is a good thing. There, as he said, quote, the sports system may be a little bit late, but it's never a bad time to heal, unquote. So he acknowledges that there have been past allegations anyway or whatever, but nothing within the last, I guess, 15 years anyway. Tennis Canada can confirm that they do not have and never currently have and has never had a reserve fund for non-injury health liability claims, Valley Tetro Director of Communications said. So basically, Tennis Canada, we're good with that. Wrestling Canada has settled litigation out of court when it is appropriate to do so, according to marketing communication manager Darren Matte. However, it does not have a specific contingency fund to cover non-insurable liabilities and is not considering creating one. Quote, while our annual budget generally includes a small contingency to address any and all operational overages, the contingency has not been used to pay out any financial settlements from litigation, which was either threatened or commenced. They do have an abuse liability coverage in its general insurance policy, though.
Yep. So their annual budget, they set aside money just in case there are overages in any other of the budgetary categories.
Correct. So,
which is what it's supposed to be.
So, Hockey Canada, you're basically out on a limb on this one.
Yeah.
You screwed up bad.
Yep. You've been cooking the books and stashing away millions of dollars.
We got about 5 minutes left here, Jason. We're going to legitimately crush in as much as we can here. We reported last week that the Tempe City Council was looking at a referendum. According to the November 7th statement that was put out, Tempe City Council will meet on November 10th, that's today, to consider a resolution that reserve a spot on the county's May 2023 special election ballot regarding a proposed hockey arena and entertainment district. I'm reading this directly verbatim from their actual statement here. If the council passes the resolution, which they're almost assured to do, they would be declaring the possibility of holding a special election on May 16th, 2023. That action would not indicate city council approval of the project. The council will consider the project itself later this month. So we're almost guaranteed to give this over to the people as a part of the referendum, and we're not telling you that we approve it at all.
Yeah.
Hey, Tempe, Arizona. Thanks. You're screwing the Coyotes over well.
Yeah. You're going to be going halfway through 2023 before you have an answer on if the citizens are like, yeah, go ahead. And then the city has to go, yeah, we'll go ahead.
And we're still 2 to 3 years away from having this thing built.
Yeah.
At minimum.
Move to Houston. Just do it.
Evander Kane's scary incident on a couple nights ago in Tampa Bay where he had his... Patrick Maroon. I mean, again, it was unintentional.
Completely accident.
Maroon went to step by him and clipped his arm, and basically Kane and left the ice dripping blood all over the place. They got him stable. They got him settled. They got him into the hospital where he said he's going to make a full recovery. 3 to 4 months he's out, though, in terms of letting everything heal properly. Yeah. But is it time the NHL starts mandating the Kevlar cut-resistant stuff, like skates, you know, socks, that kind of stuff, to prevent this stuff?
You need an underlayer that sits underneath your equipment that covers your wrist.
Yes.
I don't know why we made fun of Thomas Plekanec for so long with the turtleneck.
I always thought that was a good idea, especially seeing what happened to Richard Zednik.
Yep. I think that either you have to have the Kevlar underlayer, or we have to stop having our elbow pads end and not be covered by the end of the hockey gloves. Because my gloves back at home, they do not cover my wrist, and I wish they did.
We're not going to get a chance to talk about the Canada Games team, especially the women's team. And the women's team looks like it's going to be very interesting. But I do want to make a mention, though, that Grace Glover, who is going to the Canada Games as part of the Team Manitoba team. She's a goaltender for the Westman Wildcats. She was recruited by the Alberta Pandas, so she'll be going out to the University of Alberta next year to tend net for them. So another Manitoba goalie out there. Hallie Oswald already out there, and we'll see Grace Glover out there next year. Beyond that, a Trinity Western goaltender getting another opportunity as Taylor Joseph will take to the nets, hopefully this weekend, but he'll be defending the nets now for the Adirondack Thunder in the ECHL. So congratulations to him. Obviously, a big opportunity with him. He's got one professional win under his belt as he earned a win with the Marlies last year. So you got to see him play a little bit or whatever. What do you remember best from him, Jay?
I mean, just good guy, great goalie. I think he had a tough job last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, hard to make a judgment when you have that much of a heavy workload. But he did great, all things considered.
I got to say, pretty impressed with everything that's gone on in terms of some of the stuff that's going, again, for minor hockey and in terms of some of these players that are playing here. A lot of good players that are coming back to play for Manitoba here. We'll pick that up next week as we talk a little bit about that. Jason, what's going on the show this week on Let's Talk About?
I don't know what's happening next week, but this past episode talked about Bill 28 out in Ontario and the Ontario government's use of the notwithstanding clause.
Right, yes.
Section 33 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
The last bit of it, I was like, this is pretty good.
Yep.
I do want to say, obviously, tomorrow, holiday in for most of people in Canada. I mean, obviously, retail stores will open at around 1 o'clock in terms of what's going on. Essentials from in the morning if you need, you know, milk or bread or whatever, no big deal. But for everybody who's taking the day off tomorrow, enjoy it. Take it easy. Remember to honor the veterans that are out there because, again, these are the people that basically guaranteed freedom for a number of people across this world, including most of Europe with the whole World War One, World War Two, and everything that went on there. So if you know a veteran, say thanks, give thanks. If you lost a veteran, either, you know, through the war or just, you know, having them pass away from old age or whatever, again, honor their memory tomorrow by wearing your poppy and certainly by you know, taking in a little bit any of the ceremonies. That's the word I'm looking for. Any of the ceremonies that are on TV there. Anything you want to say before we get out of here, Jay?
I'm going to reiterate. Tomorrow, take a moment, remember, got some RAF pilots in my family, so gonna,
You know, there we go.
Be thankful for the good guys.
Free Range Radio coming up next with Skippy here on 101.5 UMFM. Stay tuned for that, folks. We're out of here for another week. It's been the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
I remember I was in Toronto and I was going to Winnipeg and it was my first show there and everyone in Toronto was like, "Ha-ha, bring a coat." Winnipeg. Hope you like cold weather.
Transmitting live from frigid Winnipeg. This is 101.5 UMFM.
I'm not sleeping outside. Then I got to Winnipeg and I was like, "Oh, they're right. They're right." They nailed it.